Welcome back to hour number two of Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Ferrar. Pleased now to be joined by Al Brown, former Tennessee staffer, certainly does a terrific job in analyzing basketball. His appearance brought to you by Matlock Tire and Service, with locations in Knoxville, the one on Kingston Pike near Lovell Road, also Hardin Valley, also in Loudoun County. Al, I know that you have been a longtime fan of Matlock Tires.
Oh, absolutely, Jimmy. Good to be with you and Vince today and talk about Matlock Tire. A great family-run business. I met Jimmy when I first came to Tennessee. I needed some work done on my car and some new tires, and they were just a place that when I went the first time, I didn't want to go anywhere else.
You put me onto Matlock Tires. I have not left. They might not be happy with you, but by golly, I've been happy with them. So,
well, they've had some questions about that, Jimmy. But we'll. It's going to be okay.
Al, a big win for the Lady Vols. They're the number two ranked team in South Carolina that they beat. We've talked about the issues that the Lady Vols had losing at Texas A&M at College Station Sunday afternoon, getting stuck in Houston Sunday night, Monday night, arriving in Knoxville Tuesday night at about 9 o'clock, and then, although a bit shaky in that second quarter, getting a big win over South Carolina. You think that, considering the circumstances, that's one of the most impressive wins in recent Lady Vols history, correct?
Oh, no question about it, Jimmy. All they went through, they lost two straight games, lost at Kentucky, and they lost at A&M, as you mentioned. And all the travel problems with the hotel not having power for a while, and having to bus from College Station to Houston, and not knowing when you're going to get out of Houston, and Texas, of course, is struggling with the not only the pandemic, but certainly the weather. And there's no way that this team could come back and perform the way they did, particularly the second half against South Carolina. It was, and South Carolina is a great basketball team, number two in the regular polls, and deservedly so. Very talented, well coached, and rested. And the Lady Vols looked like they were the ones that were rested in the third and fourth quarter when they dispatched South Carolina. I have to think that under all the circumstances, considering everything, it had to be one of the most outstanding victories in Lady Vol history.
Renia Davis did not score in the first half. She had 24 in the second half. She also contributed 12 rebounds. Al, I thought that second half from Renia Davis is about as well as she could play.
Yes, Jimmy. I think, and that from watching women's basketball all these years, that's one of the best second half performances against a quality opponent that I've seen. I mean, it was she was terrific, and you know, considering she was 0 for 4 from the field in the first half, and she came back in the second half, you'd think, well, she would be discouraged or upset or a combination of things, and she put 24 points on the board. And as you mentioned, she had 12 rebounds and an assist, and 10 for 10 from the free throw line. I mean, it was quite a performance.
Well, she got called soft by her head coach. She didn't like that.
Well, that probably was the thing that turned the tide for her. But whatever happened in halftime was a positive, and certainly a credit to the coaching staff to prepare that group to come back the second half and perform the way they did.
Coach Brown, what can you say about Ray Burrell? I mean, as hot and cold as Renia Davis has been, and obviously when she's that hot, as good as it gets, but Ray Burrell just seems to be flatlined, very consistent for this team. Talk about how important that's been for that squad.
Excellent point, Vince. And last night in the first half, Burrell hit key buckets when everybody else just couldn't seem to buy a basket to keep the Lady Vols in the hunt. And She's been, as you're suggesting, the most consistent Lady Vol performer all year on both ends of the court. We must not forget that she defended Ryan Howard from Kentucky in two games and held her in check, which is a great tribute to her defensive ability. She rebounds the ball as well. She didn't last night as much as she usually does, but she has been outstanding without question.
I know officials are your friends, some of your closest friends, Coach Brown, but Jimmy brought up earlier in the show how some of the fouls on Tamari Key, maybe there's only one or two legit and the rest were really ticky-tack. I thought that was the case in the Texas A&M game as well with her. Why do you think that's the case for her where seemingly she's getting a lot of those ticky-tack fouls?
Well, a lot of times, this happened back when I was coaching in the men's game even, a lot of officials don't know how to officiate tall post players. And she is 6'5", is obviously a tall post player. She positions herself well. She has her hands up most of the time. Many of the fouls they call are body fouls, which mean obviously contact, but the offensive player many times comes into her. And there's nothing she can do about it. And as you mentioned, the A&M game, there were only four fouls called in the first half on each team in the A&M game, and then 30-some in the second half combined for both teams. I mean, it was absolutely a nightmare. And so anyway, it's too bad, but she can't do anything about it, and hopefully most of the time she can avoid the contact, but it's very hard to do when they come charging in there.
Al, when you said a lot of officials don't know how to officiate and you paused there for a second, I thought you were done right there, but but then you explained yourself. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah. There are times when I would have been done for one reason or another.
Yeah, and it well, and I wonder along those lines, Al, if it's going to affect her defense, because she's been a player that's had 10 blocks in a game, so I wonder if that's going to affect her aggressiveness when she gets some of those fouls called against her. Again, I thought some of them were just ridiculous, but I wonder if that's going to affect her defensive proficiency.
So far, Jimmy, it hasn't. She's maintained her poise in that regard, even though she hasn't, she hasn't always been out of foul trouble. But it varies from game to game. And when she's going against players that of comparable size, it usually is not so bad. It's when the smaller, shorter players come charging into her that the problems are caused. But she did have five fouls last night, and she's going against Boston, one of the better post players in the conference.
So how do you think Tennessee responds to this? Is this a jump start? Is this tell them this is how good you can be, and then they close this season out strong? Or do you think that that's yet to be seen as to whether they can play at a consistently high level?
Well, when you put consistent out there, Jimmy, you're talking about two Tennessee basketball teams that have been somewhat inconsistent.
Yeah.
And the Lady Vols have consistently been in games. I mean, they've had a chance to win every game that they've lost. And they've closed out games, too, that were close ball games. I think the best thing that's happened to this team is that, of course, that win last night and going to Georgia on Sunday, a team that beat them 67-66 at Tennessee. I think that we'll see a lot then. I think they will really rise to the challenge Georgia, and I think we'll see a team that may be on the move as the season progresses.
While we're on Lady Vols in Georgia, give us your keys for Tennessee against Georgia.
Well, Georgia, the guard play is really key in the Georgia game because the Georgia guards are terrific. They're terrific defenders. They're very quick, and they gave Tennessee a lot of trouble in Knoxville. So one of the things they've got to do, Tennessee has to do, is stop the transition game because they run on every possession. And the thing that Georgia has done the last two games, now there are four, they only make four threes a game until the last two games, and they've made 10 in one game and 9 in the other. So that is a cause for concern. You've got to shut down the three-point shot, and yet they're quick enough to drive if they don't take the shot. And then the Lady Vols have got to dominate the boards. They're going to have to control the boards, and they're going to have to go against the pressure because Georgia presses. So they're going to have to handle the press, and they have to, you know, going back to the offense, they're going to have to post up those shorter guards and hopefully get them in foul trouble.
That's Al Brown. His appearance brought to you by Matlock Tires. When we come back, oh, and his appearance brought to, we're also, he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll have more with that when we come back. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Ferrara, Sports Talk 99.1, The Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of The Sports Animal.
Wile E. Coyote, super genius.
We are 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Ferrar, our special guest, Al Brown. His appearance brought to you by Matlock Tire and Service, and he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Let's go to the phones where Reed is on. Reed, you're on with Al Brown.
Hello, gentlemen. How are y'all today?
Fine, Reed.
Coach Brown, I've got a question for you concerning the women's game. Why did they go to the quarter play, and what are the advantages and disadvantages?
That's a good question, why they went to it. They were going to experiment with it to start with, and then they decided they liked it and they would stay with it. The advantages are that you get an extra break, an extra free break during the half, and you can regroup, so to speak. It also gives you, a good coach, the advantage of being able to diagram plays to come out of the quarter to change defenses or to come up with a new offensive wrinkle. And I don't know that there are any disadvantages to it. I grew up with the quarter system. I didn't like the change. I like the half that the men, the halves that the men use better. But it certainly grew on me as I worked in the women's game. It was a reminder of the old days, and it certainly doesn't change much in the game. One of the things that they change in the women's game, which I think they should change in the men's game and do it in the NBA, is the timeout situation where you can advance the ball to the half court. That makes the game, particularly at the end, more exciting. But that's a different question. That's a different answer.
I wasn't even aware that didn't even exist in the women's game. I thought it did.
What's that?
Where you could advance the ball with a timeout.
I said, yes, that was one of the advantages.
Okay.
Yeah, yes.
I misunderstood you then. Can you explain how this affects foul calling and going into the bonus situation?
Well, you start the quarter with a new set of fouls, so to speak. And it changes. That would be different than in a half situation, but that's good, I guess.
All right, gentlemen. Well, I appreciate your answers, and you guys be safe.
Thanks, Reed.
Coach, moving to the men, what did you make of Tennessee's performance with a high-scoring game and the return of Victor Bailey Jr. and John Fulkerson in the win over South Carolina on Wednesday?
Excuse me. Great win at home, a good 20-point win, 97-93, pretty much in command most of the game. South Carolina looked like a team in disarray and really didn't bring their A game to the Thompson Bowling Arena. For some reason, Pons and Fulkerson woke up, combining for 29 points and 15 rebounds. And a guy I really liked and have liked, Victor Bailey, comes up with 29 points and 7 for 10 from 3. I think he is part of the answer to this inconsistency that Tennessee has seen so far. We'll know a little more, of course, when they entertain Kentucky tomorrow. But it was a dominating performance against a team that in South Carolina that just didn't look like the South Carolina team that had played better in stretches this season.
So, Coach, how do you handle a player that you haven't started, but you did start, and he busts out with an offensive game like that? Do you ride the hot hand and keep him in the starting lineup? Is it just based on the matchup? How do you handle whether you start him again?
Well, Vince, that's you're asking the old coach that question, and I'll tell you how I did it. He would come back and start the next game. It's like I coach baseball, too. It's like having a hitter go 4 for 4 one day, and then the next day you say, well, because of the change in the pitching, we need to bench him and start somebody else. I just don't believe in that. When you ride the hot hand, and Victor is hot, Bailey is hot right now, and I would go with him. Vescovi is not as hot, and you can bring him off the bench like they did the other night. Although it depends on how you structure the starting five. I mean, you could still start Vescovi if you wanted to. That would mean you'd have to drop maybe Springer or Johnson out of the lineup, and that right now wouldn't be wise, I don't think.
Let's go back to the phones where Jeremy is our next caller. Jeremy, you're on with Al Brown.
Hey, guys. How are you all?
Fine.
Kind of a comment to Coach Brown's talking about the referee, and it seems like this year, several games that I've watched, the refs are just as inconsistent as the playing has become, and it seems like a guy like LeBron James would love to play with some of these refs at his games as much as he loves the ticky-tack stuff and love to complain as much as he does wanting fouls. With that being said, Tennessee's basketball team, I want to ask all you guys' opinion, personal opinion, if we can get some consistent play like we did in the game against South Carolina, first half of the Georgia game, second half of the Kentucky game, if we can come together and put all of that together and Tennessee play to their real true potential, how far do you see these guys being able to take this team through the tournament?
Al?
Well, to answer that, that's a difficult question to answer because if everything fell into place, as you're suggesting, this could be a Final Eight team. But on the other side or the other part or the other side of the coin, they've been so inconsistent where they have a tremendous game. Let's say they open the tournament against South Carolina and they have that 20-point win, and then they turn around and play an LSU-type team or a Loyola-type team and don't perform well. So it's very difficult to tell. When you have a team like Gonzaga or Baylor that's been consistent all season, you expect them to advance in the tournament, even though they could be derailed. But it's very difficult to project Tennessee, except in a scenario you presented where they would be a legitimate final eight, maybe 16 final eight team.
Okay. And, Jimmy, a question for you or anybody that can really answer. As far as Tennessee's football team, of course, everybody's knowing that they're really needing some high performance from their linemen, you know, some of these freshmen coming in, some of the guys they got now to step up. Is there anything going on right now maybe in the transfer position to where Tennessee is interested in anyone at the offensive line position? Is that available? And I'll hop off here and listen to your answer. I appreciate it.
Okay. Jimmy, I don't know how many offensive linemen are in the transfer portal. I don't have access to that. I will say this. I will guarantee you Tennessee is combing that transfer portal for an offensive lineman. They need that. It's one of the things that could hold the offense back from being productive this year because I don't think they have enough quality offensive linemen. I don't think they have much depth, and so they got to find some of them. And I do think that you will find some of them cropping up as we get into spring ball. There'll be a lot of players that are going to jump in there over the next few weeks and toward the end of spring football and get in the transfer portal. And then Tennessee, I think, will look very hard in that direction to try to complement an offensive line that I think needs a lot of help. When we come back, we will have more with Al Brown. His appearance brought to you by Matlock Tires, Service, and Repair. He joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline with Vince Farrar and Jimmy Heim, Sports Talk 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Staff. This is the home of accurate, factual sports information. Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Himes on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk with Vince Farrar. I'm Jimmy Himes. Our guest, Al Brown. His appearance brought to you by Matlock Tire Service and Repairs. And he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. A quick note, we had scheduled an interview with Mike Caldwell, Oak Ridge product, who's headed in the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame, a linebacker that played in the NFL for a dozen years. He is ill. He will not be able to join us. Also, want to mention that as far as Al, I wanted to ask you this question about Tennessee. So Victor Bailey got 29 points. John Fulkerson and Eve Pons combined for 29 points after scoring 17 combined points in the last three games. Which was more important to Tennessee, Bailey's 29 or the 29 from Fulkerson and Pons?
Good question, Jimmy. The 29 from Fulkerson and Pons. They have to have an inside game, and they have to have productive points. And it looks like while they have guys on the bench that are post players, it doesn't seem that they are bringing anything. And so Pons and Fulkerson have to produce if they're going to advance, as we talked earlier in the show, in the NCAA tournament. They can't do it without Pons and Fulkerson being productive, even though they still won at Kentucky without either one of them being productive. It won't last. They have to be in there to play defense as well. I mean, there's two ends to the court.
Well, and it's, you're not going to get 50 points from two true freshmen every day against Kentucky. So that also allowed Tennessee to win that game. All right.
Absolutely.
Let's go to Justin. Justin, you're on with Al Brown.
Good afternoon, guys. I guess my question, Viscovi really frustrates me in that a few games ago they had a half-court double-team trap, and every single time in the front court he was so predictable because he would pass it left. And it seems like when we play a team with an elite athlete at the point guard position, they shut down Viscovi. And I guess my question for Coach Brown is, I like the lineup of Jordan James at the point, and then you can have Springer and Johnson on the floor at the same time with those three, with Pons and Fulkerson. Is that a doable lineup to improve the inconsistency that Viscovi brings, or is Coach Barnes just ride or die with Viscovi at the point? And I'll jump off and listen. I appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thanks for the call, Justin. That's a tough call. There isn't a identifiable point guard for the Volunteers. They're trying to use Viscovi there. He's not able to go right effectively most of the time, particularly, as you suggest, under pressure. And Bailey apparently can't fill that role either. I'm talking about the point guard role. And I don't – James is a better wing and four player than he is a point guard, although it might be worth a try. He's a leader. They look to him for his leadership. So, and he can handle the ball decently. Most of the time, if you've got a point guard that can at least put the ball in play, you're going to be okay. You don't always have a creator there, but they don't have apparently a creator at that spot.
Let's go to Jerry. Jerry, you're on with Al Brown.
Hey, afternoon, fellas. Coach Brown, I don't know if there's an answer to this, but an opinion maybe for anyway. But watching these women play, it really gets frustrating, some of the shots they put up. I mean, it you'd think that if a girl goes through grammar school, middle school, high school, they've bound to make an all-star team somewhere along the line and get scouted and recruited and signed, and they get to college, and they really have no shot. You'd think somewhere along the line somebody would have got them to decide in a gym or a playground or something and said, you're going to have to develop some kind of shot that you can depend on hitting with some kind of consistency. But the time of that question, I guess, is by the time a girl gets to college, can you teach her to shoot, or do you just kind of take what you got and hope that she can, you don't want to mess her up any worse or something? How do you handle that?
Well, Jerry, that another good question. You recruit offensive players and teach them to play defense. That doesn't make any difference whether it's the men's game or the women's game. So you recruit players that can score the ball and have proven that in their AAU and high school experience. And, you can work with them when you get them to improve their shooting. Much of the time it's decision-making when they should take the shot that they are able to hit, and do they get to the spot on the floor where they're comfortable scoring the ball. Everybody has a sweet spot on the floor where they want to go to get their shot, and particularly in critical times. And if you can't identify that or haven't identified it, and it doesn't come in your offense, then sometimes errant shots occur.
Yeah, you pretty much hit it right there. Is when do they shoot? Because it seems like a lot of times the ball's like a hot potato, and they just want to get rid of it, and they just put it up two-handed, backhanded, side-handed, just almost throw it up anyway and hope that it goes in. But even a layup, there's just a proper way to shoot the ball, and you can't just sling it up there and hope that it goes in. But anyway, thanks for taking the call there, and hopefully we can improve on that.
Thanks, Jerry.
Yep, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And when we come back, we'll have one more segment with Al Brown. His appearance is brought to you by the good folks at Matlock Tire Service and Repair, with locations in Knoxville and Hardin Valley and Maryville and Lenoir City. And he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and the Gates Hotline. With Vince Farrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Follow us on Twitter at Sports Radio WNML to keep up with breaking sports news. Now, back to Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Himes on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Farrar. Our guest, Al Brown, brought to you by Matlock Tire Service and Repairs, and he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline.
Well, Al, let's go through some of your top fives. We want to make sure we get those in before the hour is up. I guess we'll start with the men in the SEC? Give us your top five.
The top five men in the SEC, as I see it, it's very, very tight right now. Even though Alabama is way out in front, that can change here in the next week with the next two or three games everybody has to play. But at number five, I've got Florida and Mississippi. They're both right there on the cusp of being good. They have great performances, and then they're inconsistent, as we've seen throughout the conference. Tennessee at four, 15-5 and 8-5 in the league. LSU in three, even though they're up and down as well, but they're 8-4. Arkansas is coming on. I'm a big believer in Musselman and his coaching ability. He's got them playing at a high level now. They're 9-4. And then Alabama at 12-1 leads the SEC men's team.
All right, what about the top five nationally?
Top five nationally, Ohio State at five, Michigan at four, Villanova at three still, even though they lost a game this week. Baylor has been on pause, but they're 17-0, but they're still my second-best team in the conference, in the nation. And then Gonzaga, without question, they're 21-0. They dispatched St. Mary's, one of their nemesis in the past, last night handily. They are the best team in the country, have been all year.
Al, the fact that Gonzaga continues to win all these games by double digits, could that be a disservice to them when they get into the NCAA tournament, or are they just that good?
Absolutely, Jimmy. That's been one of the problems they've had in advancing in the tournament. One of the things about playing in a tough conference and being challenged on a nightly basis, when you get in the NCAA tournament, you know how to win all kinds of games, whether it's a widespread margin or a close game, overtime game, you know how to win them. And Gonzaga hasn't faced that, which they will in the NCAA tournament as they advance. They will run up against some teams that will challenge them, and although they had some pre-conference challenges, but still, they you get used to winning by large margins. It's harder to play in close games, particularly in the NCAA tournament.
Al, your top five SEC women's teams.
Top five SEC women's teams: Kentucky at five. They're 8-4. Tennessee in four. They're 7-3. Georgia at three, they're 8-4, and the only reason Georgia's ahead of Tennessee right now is because they beat Tennessee at Tennessee, and they've played pretty consistent basketball this year. This has been a better Georgia team than most people had anticipated. Number two is South Carolina with that loss to Tennessee. They move to number two, and Texas A&M, to me, the most talented team maybe in the women's game in the SEC, number one at 10-1.
On the national level for women, you got South Carolina 5, Texas A&M at 4. Who are the top three?
Louisville in 3 at 20-1, North Carolina State in 2 at 14-2, and number one, one of my favorite teams and one of my favorite coaches, Connecticut, number one at 17-1.
I'm sure you choked when you said that. I do want to ask you this. Charlie Cream said that with Tennessee beating South Carolina, Tennessee, the Lady Vols, would be on the number three seed line. Your thoughts on that, and if you think the Lady Vols are deserving of that at this point?
Well, I think they are, Jimmy, but I'll tell you, a lot of that's going to depend on the outcome of the Georgia game on Sunday. If they happen to lose again to Georgia, that's not going to stay steady at the three line. But if they beat Georgia, they're pretty much, we're closing in on the end of the season. They're pretty much set for the three line, at least as we go down the stretch.
All right, I want to ask you another question. Kim English said the other day on a Zoom call with the media that undoubtedly the leader of this Tennessee team is Josiah Jordan-James. This is James's team. Does that surprise you?
Well, it doesn't really, Jimmy, because I don't know the inner workings of that group and unfortunately don't get to spend time with them every day. When he didn't play the other night against South Carolina, he was everywhere helping everybody, including the coaches. Yes, I think he probably, they've made a good assessment. He is probably the leader, a vocal leader, and can lead on the court at times, particularly with his play.
Your keys for Tennessee against Kentucky?
Well, against Kentucky, it's going to be interesting to see, which team shows up. And that's not only Tennessee, but Kentucky. They've both been up and down. If Fulkerson and Pond show up the way they did against South Carolina and contribute significantly, I think it can be an easy, well, not easy, but certainly a win for the Volunteers. If they don't, and you mentioned this before, it's not, I hope Springer and Johnson can duplicate what they did at Rupp Arena, but that's not a guarantee. And James is questionable with a wrist injury. He was significant at Kentucky as well. But Tennessee has to control the boards and play a solid basketball game against Kentucky. Kentucky's averaging 69 points a game in conference play, but they're and giving up 69, while Tennessee is averaging 75 at home and giving up 70. It should be a really even game, and hopefully, of course, the Volunteers prevail.
Al, always a pleasure to catch up with you. Thank you for joining us. We look forward to visiting with you again next week.
Thanks to you and Vince. It was great being with you guys today, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks, Al. Coach Al Brown, his appearance brought to you by Matlock Tire Service and Repair, locations in Knoxville, Hardin Valley, Maryville, and Lenoir City. And he joined us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline.